welcome to the Development Policy Centre. In this podcast, you'll hear a Q&A discussion hosted by Dame Meg Taylor, daughter of legendary colonial explorer and patrol leader Jim Taylor. The Q&A preceded a documentary following Dame Meg's retracing of her father's expedition in PNG to make contact with previously undiscovered Highland tribes. We hope you enjoy the podcast.
Before we start, I just want to say thank you all for being here. I mean, this film was made a long time ago, as you can see.
Thank you, Dame Meg. It was really wonderful to sort of go back and visit.
Thank you. But I really appreciate your interest in this, and I'm a bit amused by why all of a sudden there is that interest here, because it was made some time ago. But it's also very sentimental to look back and see that tomorrow I'm going to visit the National Library and deposit the original manuscripts of the 1933 patrol. Wow.
Patrol took place 1938. My recollection is that one of the lays went to the Highlands first. That was the start of Mount Harding, but I have no recollection of when that was. I mean, how long has Mount Harding been a settlement by the time this patrol started?
It wasn't a settlement, because the first expedition left. In terms of the government patrol, was 1933. It came from Bena through the Waiaki into Harden, then it went back again down through the what we call the South Wall, going back to the other parts of Chimbu, then back into the Eastern Highlands. Then Harden was just a little, from my understanding, just a little patrol post, and then the Harden Sea Patrol went from Harden west. I don't think it was settled until much later, but Bill Standish is in the room. Mm-hmm. He may know.
There were quite a few German missionaries in Harken in the late 30s.
And the Lays had started gold mine up at Kuta, just out of Harken, but I think this belief that the Lays discovered the Western Highlands through Chimbu and so on is because Jim's role was not mentioned. He was shown in the film, First Contact. But for some reason, to simplify the story, it was all focused on the Lay brothers.
May I ask, when you're asking questions, if you could just identify yourself as well? That would be great. Thanks, Rick. Please, anyone?
Francesca Merlin. It's very hard to keep looking here. Thank you very much for the film and for tonight. I'm wondering if you could tell us a bit more when the carriers bailed up and asked for more money and so on, how those negotiations went, and then how many people were able to go on. It's sort of magical there, and everybody gets into a helicopter.
Well, it was magical. This was in Lake Copiapó, and it was. We'd spent the day hiking all around the mountains, and we thought everything was going well. And in the morning, when we got ready to, we knew that it'd be a week to get us down into the Strickland Gorge. And I found out later that this was done a lot. And we renegotiate. Didn't have that amount of cash on us, and we were stuck, so where do you go? But before I left Goroka, I had given my coordinates to Pacific Helicopters, just in case anybody got ill. And it was out of the blue that a helicopter pilot was in the area, and he called in and wanted to see how we all are. We got everybody out, right, chopper. We did once. And it was a blessing in disguise. But, that there are parts of the expedition that just aren't on film, and perhaps one of the most exciting and magical parts was when we actually hit the head of the the Fiat River, before you get into the May River, we built out of balsa rafts. We put all our cargo on and we just hung on like that and we shot rapids all the way down till we hit, right down until we got to one of the government stations. And then I'd made contact with Alphonse with those huge big canoes, and he ran a business, and they came all the way from Ambunti to pick us up. And there were moments when we got into places like Ambunti and up, going up towards the Karawari, where, you know, a woman coming in with a group of men, and you go to the head man to make an introduction. And in Ambunti, I remember I was unloading cargo, and all of a sudden I heard this voice, just like that, pick it in with Tana Airway. And I went, oh, we're in real trouble now. But there were moments, people were, young boys, when my father came in as a strict officer in that region as well, and was able to go and sit with one of the old people who knew him, who was dying at that time, and spend the afternoon with them. You know. But it's you know, to go back and look at this, some of the dialogue is pretty simple when you look at it now, and I go, oh, God. But it was what happened in terms of the experience that was really important. It did change my life. Because I went back after again, back out into parts of that country. And I hope to go to Tel Ferman sometime next year to see what's happening there.
Good evening. My name is Eslin, and I'm from Vanuatu. I'm an ANU student doing international relations, and I've actually personally met Dan McTaylor, working for Foreign Affairs back in Vanuatu. Now, I'm very interested in what were some of the challenges that you faced as a woman, actually just traveling those distances, not only that, but reflecting on what your dad, and following what your dad did. It's such an inspiration, yet I feel like as a Pacific Islander as well, women, we have, there are a lot of challenges, but what were some of the challenges that you had to face as a woman having to go through that? Thank you.
Well, I think going through the war was, I didn't face a lot of challenges. You know, people worked with me. What we did is, many of the Papua New Guineans in the room will know, we have Toksale radio at home. I had really worked on the Toksale, and every village knew we were coming. I'd arrive and people say, "Ah, we heard you were coming," and I was able to trade with them because I'd had some supply drops. And people wanted rice, and I wanted fresh food, so we'd make exchanges all the way. If you ask what challenges in life as a woman, I'll be really honest with you. I find the job I have now one of the hardest in terms of just how women are perceived. I think there is certain cordiality towards women, but I don't think that many men through the Pacific really think that any of us are capable and smart. I think I've come across situations where I've been bullied in this job. But in my professional life in Papua New Guinea, I was very fortunate that I went through university. I started off at UPNG before I got a scholarship to Melbourne. And that core group has stayed good friends. There's Arabi Namalu, Makari Namalu, Charles Lapani, Tania's here. So Anthony Siapu, group of us who went through together, and we've always supported each other. And being at a time when the country was going to become independent, self-governing independence, we had a greater purpose. And that purpose was what our work would be in terms of bringing the country through to independence. So it's like many countries, when people have a greater purpose, you work with each other all the way along. But for young women that are coming behind me and other women that have, your mothers that have pioneered, and my mother, that doesn't get a lot of acknowledgement in this film, but was a pioneer herself, because she didn't want to marry my father, believe me. She told me that. She ran away many times to go back to her own community. But in our own community, in the Wagyu, when she died, young men came to the funeral and said, she opened up the doors for us so that we could see the life of the white man and their cultures and customs, and she gave us that opportunity. But for those women, young women like yourselves, in the Pacific, it's just you've got to be very focused, very determined, and know that whatever happens, you have a contribution to make to the development of your people. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise.
Thank you, Meg. Margaret O'Callaghan, from a few years back. Some years ago, I had a meeting, UN meeting, with my colleagues, and one of them was a World Bank guy, and he said that their big boss, whoever it was at the time, I've forgotten, made them all go and spend a week in a village somewhere.
Jim Wolfenson, the Australian.
No frills. And I won, of course, this was to root them back into the reality of most people's lives, and I wondered if this walk, in fact, did that for you. In later years, you think back, and when you were working in Washington, whether, in fact, that ever came back to you about the realities of life out there.
I think growing up in Papua New Guinea and living, that walk, yes, very much in terms of some of the harshness of, especially when you get into the West Sepik area on the border. Very tough. Access to good quality food for the people, and you really noticed it in the health of people and the skin diseases that they had, etc. But I think even our home outside of Goroka and our home in our community in the Wagyu Valley, that keeps you pretty rooted in everything. And I think all Papua New Guineans here know it doesn't matter where you are when there's commitments to be made and funerals and weddings. It doesn't matter whether you're in Washington or in Canberra. Everybody has a mobile phone, and you all have to... I used to find myself in Washington organising trucks of food from Goroka to Wagyu to this and that. So it hasn't changed. It hasn't changed that much for me. But in terms of this president of the World Bank wanting vice presidents to go out and live in communities... one of the vice presidents of IFC, I organised for him to go and stay down in the Southern Highlands. And everybody was worried about him. But he came out very, having learnt, he was from Lebanon. And I think it was a real culture shock. Sorry, sir.
Thank you. My name is Sakia Stoner, and I'm the Acting High Commissioner. The PNG High Commission in Canberra, and firstly I'd like to thank the new development policy centre for organising this, and of course Ben McTaggart, I must commend you highly for producing this film. It is a very, very remarkable film of a great Australian at a time. I'm from Anger Province, and Maramoni. This is another province, another district of Enya. Coming from there, and I think this film has actually shown me, and I've learned a lot in terms of my own country, the rough terrains and the difficulties and so on, and I must commend you for producing this film. I think one point I'd like to make is your father, Jim Taylor. Going into a place where you can't even speak and communicate with people, and people are saying that there's a ghost coming back and all kinds of things. And then walking through that, it must have been very, very difficult. And the film really, it takes us through the journey and appreciates the challenge that he has to go through. And so I think, and that was a tremendous thing he did for the two countries, and in terms of the setting the foundation, in terms of the administrations going in. And, you know, I think it's one of the difficult challenges that he has to face, and, you know, the strength he has to have to tackle these people all throughout the mountains, valleys, and so on. And, you know, in terms of and, you know, pave the way for Australian colonization and corporate track and the relationship that Australia had with PNG over the years, I think he has set a lot of foundation in terms of the relationship between the two countries. And I must commend him for his love for PNG, and eventually settles up there. An issue of what a question I'd like to ask is, in terms of the current knowledge, in terms of current Australians knowing the role he played up there, how, you know, to me, I think, for me, I think that information is quite important for the Australian public to know great Australians that would have done a lot of great work for PNG, and so if there is, you know, that if information is not going out, then my question is, what should we do? Because I can see many horses going up a Kogoda track. And maybe we should take the horses, you know, and then take them to this. The journey is, maybe we can't complete the whole journey, but maybe a bit of travel, and travel for the journey that he has taken. So why not we come up with some initiative so that, you know, Australians can go up and see the country and all that. Thank you.
I don't think that there is a lot of genuine knowledge. I mean, Bill Standish, I keep referring to him because he's related. But interested in all that history and the pioneering side of all the early exploration. I think that Pax Australiana is very, very important, and it's part of the Australian history as much as it is the part of the history for Papua New Guineans. Kokoda has, respectfully, has that place in the hearts and souls of Australians because Australian soldiers died there. And remember, during that time, there was a very clear division between New Guinea and Papua. And those of us from the New Guinea side, as children, we had, and I had to come, when we had no high schools in Eastern Highlands, so some of us had places in Australian schools, we were given a pink piece of paper, a pink that called and said Australian Protected Persons. And it was under the UN at that time. That's why I was very amused why anyone would want to watch a film after all these years about retracing an expedition in Papua New Guinea. I think it was very important because at that time, why the 38 Patrol never got the publicity is because it was at the time before the Second World War, and all those tracks through to the border were not, the Australian government at that time decided that they wouldn't make public any of the information. So that report was kept under wrap for a long time. I mean, the 1933 expedition with the Lay brothers, and they were looking for gold. Taylor was the government officer that was given charge of the contact and with the people and making contact with the with the native people there. And that always got all the publicity, but the 38 Patrol, nobody really knew about it. Bill Gammage, when he was his professor of history at UPNG and became a very close friend of my father wouldn't talk about these things. He was very shy. Spent a lot of time with anthropologists who were working in the region, exchanging his views on what was, as they would ask him questions as well. You know, Mari Ray at that time, Diane Howlett. But and then Bill wrote the book, The Sky Travellers, and this has got much more publicity. But I don't think that the history is that known. Would people be interested in tracking that area? These are tough A lot of those places now are probably gone bush because people moved where they can get medical services. Places like Mianmin, long way through. It's hard. What you don't see there is the terrain between Telefomen and Mianmin, which is like a whole lot of sharp pencils, and it's just like that. And it took, we used to walk about seven Ks each day. Some days you couldn't even get through about five from Telefomen. But thank you for your support and acknowledgement.
Your father brought a group.
Just say who you are so everybody knows.
Sorry, Jennifer Blake. Your father brought a group of nuns at the beginning of the war, and they all walked up from the lower Sepik, I understand, to Mount Nanda. But I can't remember where they came from. Could you tell me, please?
So along the Sepik River, and there was big Catholic missions along Marienburg. People are going down towards, what's the next station? Angoram, huh? And he was responsible for moving civilians out of there, and it was, he got them to a certain point, but Dan Lay then accompanied them right through, and then right across the country they walked until they got to Papua.
I understand the nuns actually were flown out to Mozambique.
No, they had to walk. I think several movements of nuns, but the ones that my father and Dan Lay were involved in. But I want to say something about the carriers and the police that were there. Two of my father's best friends are from BP Island. So Alain Manus Michel is the boy. So I'm trying to get to BP. My sister's been, but I need to go. And Bonono and Makis. And they were on that patrol. And then the people from Bena, because Makis and Sepeka, they, because of the first station in the Eastern Highlands was at Bena. And so Jim had these relationships with people there, and then he selected his carriers. Not one carrier died in that whole expedition. If you read the journals, they came to places like Telefomen and they stayed there for months, and they had, so that everybody was fed and they until they were strong again, and then they would keep moving. Whereas, you know, we were doing a speed two and a bit months trying to get through a walk that took them 15 months and then mapping everything of the contact. And you probably wonder why we asked, we had the army with us. I had asked the commander if they were interested in it, because at that time we were also thinking of going further and doing some sidewalks down to, because when the Telefomen expedition, they also went across to Olsabib, places like that right on the border. And Papua New Guinea Defence Force was very interested in having much more contact along the border area with our own, with Papua New Guinean communities there. The soldiers with us were also interested in all the different tracks that you could utilise in that part of the country, because if you kept going west, I think a day or two's walk, you'd end up in West Papua.
So, Paul Flanagan, I do some writing on PNG, mainly on the economic side. Hey, Meg, I was wondering if, on reflection now, looking at the film again, would you have a slightly different conclusion? Like, if you had a paragraph conclusion now, that's what you know now, would it be the same, or what would be that paragraph now?
Oh, that's hard. With regard to people or with regard to country?
I guess there were things there about bringing out the best in both cultures, as well as reflection on your father in the conclusion. Would there be other sort of...
No, I think on my father, I wouldn't rewrite it. I mean, I think it was true to what Jim felt about Papua New Guineans, and then in his own, even after the expeditions, he was, his bigger contribution was really as an administrator and in when he worked for Native Labour and fought very hard for people to have proper wages. And the positions he took that were not accepted by the Australian administration at that time. And he always believed, and he was, in the time when we were working towards self-government, he was very much a strong proponent of Pangu Party. I recall that. And I think was ahead of his time in what he saw as the potential of the people in Papua New Guinea, that at one time there would be a self-governing state. He never doubted that. In terms of people's quality of life, I think, you know, what you would, probably the only thing I would rewrite is that, but it's easy to say in hindsight, is that in some of these places, fighting has come back. In Southern Highlands, and, you know, the film There Doesn't Take Us, we spent quite a bit of time outside of Taree and places like that, that the stability of the, and the rule of law, the governance and administration of parts of Papua New Guinea are a disappointment. And I think they're a disappointment to many of us in terms of what's happening in our, in some of our own communities, that it's not safe for people to go to. But it's a very interesting question. I will think about it and let you know if I have rewritten the ending.
Any other questions?
Any young Papua New Guineans want to ask me questions, please? Or make a comment?
I'm Bronwyn Peck, daughter of a long-term missionary in Papua New Guinea from 1950 through to 1991.
Mm-hmm.
He left PNG. He worked mainly on the coast, but he wrote in the very early years of his work in the early 50s of doing a trek from the coast right up into the highlands. It was a few years after your father did that, of course, but he was one of the first Australian missionaries to do that. And he was a man who really loved PNG and the people and the country. I just had a question. I noticed a child in your expedition. Was that your own child? And how many of your immediate family members were on the trek with you?
My daughter came from from Kandep to Taree.
Oh.
And then she flew with her father to Ambunti and did the canoe trip on Karawari. But to take her further would have been very harsh. But my sister Daisy, she was with me right up and through to Telefoman, and then she had to go back to work. But she was a great support through that, and I think it was quite hard for her.
So that would have been a real experience for your daughter.
Yes, she doesn't remember that much. Although she was exhausted by the end of it and kept running all the way down to Mount Margarima. Car, you know, slow down, slow down.
Thank you. Thanks, Meg. It was a wonderful film.
Thank
really
you.
Loved it. I'm wondering, Salva Evelina Lawrence, doing a PhD here, and also from PNG. I'm wondering about the sense of place that doing a journey like that might evoke in you and perhaps in your children. And I ask this because a few years ago, I followed in the footsteps of my six times great-grandmother who migrated down the north coast of PNG into Milne Bay. And I was born in PNG and have always had a very strong sense of place. But doing that, walking in her footsteps, just transformed the whole experience of being from PNG and being from Milne Bay. So I wonder what it was like for you and for your children.
Well, I think that people who know me know that I'm very proud of the fact that I come from the Highlands, where some people think, oh, you know, these Highlanders are always making trouble. I'm very proud of my mountain heritage, my customs, my community, you know, and my tribe. I speak, you know, speaking the language. Very, very important that identity is always there. But I've worked internationally and I'm working through the region now. And I think one thing you get a sense of in the Pacific particularly is people are very proud of where they come from their island homes and small atolls, bigger islands. But I think this expedition for me was really important because it was a lot about the historical context. My mother was still alive. My father had just died, 87. So this was 50 years was the anniversary. And Jim and I had flown from, I think we'd done a trip somewhere in Octeti and we were coming back and I said, I wanted to do this walk down through the Telefonen. And he said, don't, it's just too dangerous, too hard, too difficult. You don't want to do that. Because we'd done Benner Hagen and then we wanted to do this. But I think, you know, you do these things because you're searching for something in yourself. And I'm very proud that you did that with your great-grandmother. And I knew your parents, and I'm sorry that, but they've journeyed to ancestors. Mm. I mean, when I finish my term serving in the Pacific, I will go home. Home is still there in the Highlands, and my parents are both dead now and buried next to each other in our local Catholic Mission Cemetery in Goroka. And on my mother's tombstone, it says, she was the embodiment of all that I loved. And on my father's, it says, for he on honeydew hath fed and drunk the milk of paradise. Those who know Kubla Khan, Coleridge's poem. And so that's part of, we all have a history, and especially to these young Papua New Guineans here who are studying and people from other islands, just be very proud of where you come from, who you are. And it's interesting that, you know, we talking about the country at a time when we go to the polls next week and I'm on my way back to vote on Monday, the whole of the Highlands will vote, all those millions. I hope that I'm on the roll, but I just hope I get a place to vote before I have to leave to come back to go to Solomon Islands. But this evening I did an interview for ABC and they were asking me about, you know, the comparison of when my father came to Papua New Guinea and now in terms of the elections. And I said, well, you know, that's one thing is that we do have a constitution. We believe in the democratic processes. It's probably one of the most robust democracies in the world. We have free speech. And there are people who are interested in good governance and want the best and have aspirations for the development of the country. Yes, we've gone through tough times and we will go through tougher times, but it doesn't mean that we give up on this. And especially for the women in this room, I understand there's about 200 candidates that are women. It's not a lot compared to the other 1,800. Total is 2,000 something, but I think that each election, you know, there are changes. But thank you very much for coming, and I wish you all well. And thank you very much, the ANU.
You have been listening to a podcast from the Development Policy Centre. For more information on our work, visit our website at devpolicy.anu.edu.au. To join the conversation on Australian aid, Papua New Guinea, the Pacific and global development policy, visit our blog at devpolicy.org. At the blog, you can also sign up to our newsletter to get all the latest updates, or you can connect with us on social media. Thanks for listening.